Erevin Perikei, Mishnah Aleph 5:1. Up to now, we've established that a person gets a tchum around his makom shvisa, and that is the area in which he's confined on Shabbos. The tchum being a 2,000 amos in all directions around his makom shvisa, his home base. Now, home base is my translation. Makom shvisa literally means the place of his residency or dwelling. Now, there really could be three kinds of makom shvisa. The simplest would be a person himself. And that being the case, a person would get 2,000 amos in all directions from where he's standing, let's say in the middle of nowhere. And technically speaking, actually, since a person gets dalet amos already, that's his place, he would actually get 2,000 amos in all directions from his dalet amos, bringing us to, like, say, 2002 or 2004, depending on if the dalet amos is 4x4 or 8x8. Okay? If a person is in a structure, let's say in his house, and his house is a very large house, for argument's sake, so then, or a small house for that matter, the measurement of the tchum is 2,000 amos in all directions around the perimeter of the house. So if the house is very big, so his tchum now could be that much larger. The third possibility is that a person is living inside a city. And if he's living inside a city or a town that's established with multiple houses, as we'll define a little more in the Masechta, as we go this parak, so then he gets 2,000 amos beyond the city. So we have to define exactly what constitutes city, what structures are included in the city, how we measure the perimeter of the city, and then we'll say 2,000 amos beyond that perimeter in all directions, that will define his tchum. Obviously, if the city is very large, then his tchum could be enormous. Now, here in Mishnah Aleph, we start by asking, Ketzed ma'abrin es ha'arim. How do we circumscribe, that is to say, to draw a rectangle around a city, to define the makom shvisa? And then around that, we would then add 2,000 amos in all directions. So, circumscribe means, and to understand in this context also of our Mishnah here, to mean you're going to draw a rectangle around all the structures that are there for living. It'll be the tightest rectangle you can make that will include all the structures. Now, of course, if the structures, for argument's sake, are arranged in a circle, so then you're going to have, like, all the corners where there's no houses, but they're inside the rectangle. And if the same goes, if the town is structured like on an X formation where the houses are on two diagonals, so then the town will be the makom shvisa. The town will be defined as a rectangle around all of those homes, meaning around the X with the four corner houses, if you will. The X will be in the four corners of the rectangle, presumably, if it's a regular X. And then beyond that circumscribed rectangle, you will then go 2,000 amos in all directions to define the tchum around that town, which is the person's makom shvisa. Now, the literal words, ketzed ma'abrin, is from the Lushan ubar, which is like a child in utero. So, like a mu'uberet is a pregnant woman. So, ketzed ma'abrin means, so to speak, how do we deal with the contours, extended contours of the city, to put them into one single circumscribed rectangle. So it's referring to as ma'abrin because the same way a woman who's pregnant, sort of her boundaries extend out at her belly where the baby is, so too the boundaries of the city will extend out to include all of the residencies and things that are fit for residency on some level, as we'll see in the Mishnah, not a very high level, to be included inside that rectangle, which will define the person's makom shvisa, the town, for the purpose of them drawing 2,000 amos in all directions for the tchum. So how do we do it? Again, so the gist is, before we get to technicalities, you're simply going to draw a rectangle tight as you could around all of the structures that are there for people to live in around the entire city, and then that rectangle will be the rectangle we're talking about, and they extend in 2,000 amos in all directions. And here we say, the Mishnah says, if you have bias nichnas and bias yotze, if you have, like, some houses that kind of go in, like, let's say for argument's sake, the city is built like a chessboard, and you have, you know, eight rows and eight columns of 64 houses. Then you have, for argument's sake, say you have an extra, one more house, the 65th house on the left side. So the point is, you can include that 65th house also, making the rectangle that defines the city include the entire chessboard, so to speak, plus a whole another column to include that extra house. Just so you should know, the distance residence needs to be included as part of this city is, it has to be within 70 and two-thirds amos of the next closest house. So that number 70 and two-thirds, you might recognize, we had it before when we talked about the Karpiv, that just number is derived from by the Karpiv, which was the storage facility, could be up to 5,000 square amos, and if you have a square that's 5,000 square amos, so then each side, using basic good old Pythagoras, each side is roughly 70 and two-thirds of an amma. So the 70 and two-thirds times 70 and two-thirds gets you to 5,000, essentially. So the point is, any house that's within 70 and two-thirds amma of the previous is included, and we're going to box them all in, whether it comes in or it comes out. Pagum nichnas and pagum yotze, same goes if you have like a wall around the city. And the pagum is the like the watchtowers. So there are watchtowers, like turrets in the walls, where people do stay, not always, but they could stay there and live there as like in the watchtower. So those pugums, those watchtowers, the turrets, they're all included in the periphery of the city. So if you have like a one bulging watchtower in the perimeter of the walls of the city, so then the square you're going to draw for your makom shvisa will be a larger square that includes that watchtower, and then you'll have a lot of empty space around the rest of the city, for argument's sake. Hayusham gududios, if you have ruins, people used to live there, and now they either lived inside the walls or in structures around the walls, and now those structures are destroyed. As long as gavos asarts tfachim, as long as the ruins still have a roof that allows for 10 tfachim of living space within, because that's sort of the minimum that a person would live in. Think back, for example, to good old Masech HaSukkah, the Dira Srucha, less than 10 tfachim. So as long as 10 tfachim high, you have those walls, then you either need to have three mechitzos, three walls that are 10 tefachim high around this structure, and then that's true even if there's actually no roof on it. Or you need to have just two walls 10 tefachim high if there's a roof on it. Both of those would be considered to be ruins that are on some level livable in, and that being the case, they would be included. Same goes ugesharim unefashos. Gesharim are bridges. In the good old days, the bridges, which allowed you, of course, to go over the stream or river, whatever it is, also had like someone living there as a tax collector, etc., whoever, you know, who's the police in charge, whoever it is, so that being security. So that being the case, someone lives inside the watch house of the bridge, and that being this case, that's considered to be a living place, and again, as long as you're within 72, there's almost the previous, it's part of the city, and it's all included. Nefashos, this is referring to like a mausoleum. Like a mausoleum is a structure you build on top of a grave, like a house on top of a grave, like the tzion. So, and people would actually live there. It's fit for living. So any of the nefashos and of this mausoleum that are fit for living in, so those would be included also, as long as sheish ben beis dira, provided that your mausoleum or your bridge has like a place for someone to live. Motzin es amida kenegdan. So then you extend the four sides of the rectangle that you're circumscribing around the city to that extent, so that you've enclosed in all of these ruins and turrets and mausolea and bridges, etc. Va'osnosa kemin tavlam rubat, and therefore you'll measure out an area that is like again a tavla. Remember, we've had this a few times. It's like the tabletop. Temporary tabletop, so it means like a make a square or a rectangle, murubat, a rectilinear, you know, structure. It's just, you know, it's got four sides and four right angles in the corners. Kadei shehei niskar es hazavios, which then allows for the leniency of the corners to be included. Meaning, just think the simplest case is think of the city as being circular. So then, of course, if you now put it inside a square, so then the corners are extra, no one lives there, but they're included inside the Malkin Shvisa, and give you that much more when you then give 2,000 amos in all four directions from those walls. There is a small girsa issue that, according to our girsa, we have osin osa kimin tavla rubat. You make it like a square, which would mean that that's the Malkin Shvisa. The town's perimeter is like a square or rectangle. Whereas the Barthenor's Lashon, or his Girsa, was the Ba'osin Osan, you make them. He'd understand this referring to the Tchum, as the four, the limits of where the Tchum ends on all four directions are all going to be also rectilinear, allowing for a rectangle that you get the corners again. You'll be able to walk in your Tchum a great distance on the corners where there's, you know, instead of just seeing 2,000 amos in all directions, you'll get roughly 2,800 amos in the four corners. Ervin Perakei, Mishnah Base 5.2. In the previous Mishnah, we said that the definition of the footprint of a city about which you'll extend the Tchum 2,000 amos in all four directions is that you circumscribe all the livable structures, as we defined the previous Mishnah, we circumscribe those structures in a single rectangle. And then sort of you can make it as tight as possible, so the rectangle will be touching the walls of the various houses or the wall of the city, whatever it is, to include all those livable areas. Now, Rabbi Meir in our Mishnah is going to disagree. He's going to say, Nosen karpeif la'ir, that in addition to including inside that rectangle for the Makom Shvi'i of the city all the structures that are livable, as defined in the previous Mishnah. So we're going to also give like a buffer zone around the city, as if it were like a chatzer, like a little courtyard around the city, which is for use, you know, for storage and for other purposes directly around the city. A karpeif, we said already before in the second parak, is like a storage facility. And we said over there that the size of a karpeif, with respect to certain halachas, I don't want to get into it again, with Erevin, is an area that's 5,000 square amos, 50 by 100 amos was the size of the chatzer back in the Mishkan, and you could carry there. So they said that's 5,000 square amos, so we'll say an area of 5,000 amos that's not hukaf ladira, that's not surrounded for the sake of residency, that's going to be okay to carry inside of. But if it's bigger than that, bigger than 5,000 square amos, it's too big and you can't carry in it. That was the discussion before. So that's the size of a karpeth. Now, when the Mishnah talks about the size of a karpef, however, it's referring not to the area, 5,000 square amos, but rather to a linear measurement, like the length of a side of a karpef. And like we saw before, we're going to imagine this karpef of 5,000 square amos as being a perfect square. If it's a perfect square, and the area of the square is 5,000 square amos, that means each side of the square is the square root of 5,000, which is working out to basically 70 and two-thirds of an amma. So in other words, that's our number, 70 and two-thirds, and Rabbi Meir is saying that when you circumscribe that rectangle around the livable structures of the city, you actually then give an extra buffer zone of 70 and two-thirds amos from the walls of the structures you're circumscribing inside that rectangle, and then from there you'll give another 2,000 amos in all directions. So effectively, the distance from the, let's say it's the northernmost wall of the northernmost structure in the city. So according to the previous Mishnah in Tanakama, you then get 2,000 amos directly north from there, from that wall. Whereas according to Rabbi Meir, you're going to get 2,000 amos from 70 and two-thirds amos north of that most northern wall. So you get a slightly bigger rectangle of your tchum that surrounds the city. Okay? Now, the Chum disagree. The Chum do agree there is such a notion about in certain circumstances you give an extra 72 thirds buffer zone around the city as an extension of the city for the city's needs, but it's not in every case like Rav Meir holds. It's in a very specific case. The specific case is the Chacham Omrim Lo Amru Karpef. They never had that rule about the Karpef buffer zone around the cities. Ele Bein Shtei Ayarot. Unless you have a scenario where you have two cities that are close together, so in the way we described in the previous Mishnah, if you'd, you know, measure them with the two circumscribed rectangles, you'd have two distinct rectangles because the distance from, let's say, the southernmost structure of the northern town is, let's say, more than 70 and two-thirds almost from the northernmost structure of the southern town. So you'd have two separate rectangles and like a gap between them. But the Chacham agree that if the distance between the northernmost structure of the southern town and the southernmost structure of the northern town is less than two times that karpef measurement, which comes out to being 141 and a third almost, 70 and two-thirds times two, So then we will sort of give the buffer zone to each of the cities, meaning it's as if the northern city has a buffer zone to the south of 70 and two-thirds amos, and the southern city has a buffer zone to the north of 70 and two-thirds amos, and that means essentially that the buffer zones overlap since the distance between those two towns is less than 141 and a third. And that being the case, it's like one contiguous city. So that means when you define the footprint of the city for the Mokun Shvisa, you'll have a single rectangle which will be circumscribed around both of those towns, and then you'll have a single tchum that extends 2,000 amos north of the northern town and 2,000 amos south of the southern town, etc. So that is the unique case where you give this extra buffer zone. That's what the Mishnah is saying here. Chacham omrim lo amru karpe, if they didn't give that extra karpe buffer zone of 70 and 2/3, ele bein shtein ayaros, unless you are talking about that you're looking at the potential buffer zone between two cities, im yesh lezu shivim ama vishirayim, if you have to the, let's say, the northern city, if you give it 70 and a bit, shirayim and a bit, like it's 70 and 2/3 almost, velezu shivim ama vishirayim, and if you give like a buffer zone to the southern one of 70, almost and 2/3 of an ama, then, and they overlap, ose karpef leshtein liyos ka'achas, then you give each of the cities the credit, so to speak, as if they had a buffer zone, they had some useful area that now makes the two cities overlap into a single city, and then you'll make a single tchum that extends around both of those towns together. And the Shulchan Aruch paskens like the Chachamim, that indeed if you have two towns within 141 and a third almost, one from the next, then they constitute a single town for the purposes of setting up your tchum, and you have one big tchum that includes both of those towns. Erevin, Perek Hey, Mishnah Gimel 5-3, and the third of the three Mishnayos that discuss how we define the footprint of a city, about which we'll set the tchum at a distance of 2,000 amos in all directions. So the previous Mishnah said if you have two separate villages, but the distance between them is less than 141 and a third amos, so then they are looked at as a single contiguous city, and you draw the tchum, a single tchum that includes both of them. Here the Mishnah says, v'chein, and similarly, shlosha kfarim hamishulashin. If you have three villages, and they are a trio, im yesh bein shnai machitzonim me'eva arbim ve'echad shlish, if, I'll translate literally here before I explain the Peshat of the Mishnah, if there's a distance between the two outer cities of 141 and a third amos, then asa emtza'i es shalashtan liyosan ke'echad. The middle city makes the three of them as if they are one. That's the literal translation. Now, what one might think the simple reading of the Peshat is that you have three villages in a row, and the distance between A and B is 141 and a third or less, and the difference between B and C is 141 and a third almost or less, so then they're contiguous, like the previous Mishnah, and you draw a single tchum around all three. And in fact, Hamishulashin, referring to them as like a trio, would sort of suggest that. However, if that were all the Mishnah was coming to say, we wouldn't need this Mishnah at all, because the previous Mishnah already established that if there's a distance of 141 and a third or less between one village and the next, then you look at them as a single continuous village. So then, now, of course, you could kind of daisy-chain lots of villages like that, and there's no reason for a new Mishnah. And therefore, the Gemara understands the case of our Mishnah is that you have two cities, we'll call them the North City and the South City, two villages, a northern and southern village, and they are, in fact, more than 141 and a third almost apart. But you have this third village off to the side. It's located, so to speak, between the two in terms of, like, vertically between the two, if you will, but horizontally, if you will, it is off to the side. So therefore you have a sort of a triangular relationship between these three villages. So the point of our Mishnah is, and I'll explain it first and I'll show you back in the words, that as long as the two, I'll call them the north and south village, are both within 2,000 amos of that third village that's located off to the side. So that is to say, both of those villages are in the tchum of the village off to the side, so that you wouldn't need to make any sort of air tchumen for the people of the village off to the side to walk to the other two villages. So then, when you kind of draw your map and figure out where to set up your tchumen, you can transpose the location of that village off to the side and move it across, so to speak, to be located between the two north and south villages. You kind of like transpose it off to the, call it to the right, whatever, to the east, doesn't make a difference. Meaning that if you'd have this sort of, once you've transposed and moved this virtual city, if you will, on the map that's between the two. So now it's, you have three. Now you have the actual northern city, the actual southern city, and this like transposed imaginary location of this middle city by moving it just directly due east or west, etc., between the two. So now, if the distance between the northern city and that kind of the virtual location of the middle city is 141 and a third or less, and again, the distance between the center, the middle phantom location of the city in the middle is 141 and a third or less to the southern city, so then you can continue to look at them, all three villages, as a single contiguous area, and draw a single tuchum around them. That is to say, you draw a single rectangle which circumscribes the northern city, the southern city, and that city, let's say, off to the west, off to the side there, into one single rectangle, and then you would give 2,000 almas to the north, south, east, west of that triangle as a single tuchum to incorporate all three of those cities. This is a good example where a picture is worth 1,000 words, and I'm sure in your Mishnayos you have a picture, so you can see what I mean by transposing and moving across, but I hope it was clear even without a picture. Ervin Perek Hey, Mishnah Dalad 5-4, and now we discuss the techniques used to measure the 2,000 amos that will define the tchum. And the basic technique they used was something which resembles a lot like the chains they use in football to measure the 10 yards, if you're familiar. You essentially have two poles or posts, and then between them you have a string. In the case of the chains in football, of course, it's metal chains, and in fact the Gemara says the metal chains would be ideal, because they don't stretch at all, they're consistent, but because of a pasuk in Yechezkel and the 40th parak, they go with rope, and specifically the rope we're going to talk about here is a rope made of linen. Okay, it's linen rope, because linen doesn't stretch. So what happens is they have these two sticks, they have this 50 amma long linen rope that's connected to the two sticks, and they'll use that to survey 50 amos at a time, the distance to get to 2,000 amos, meaning it'll be 40 total measurements, 40 times 50 is 2,000, you'll measure straight from the city outwards, the north, south, east, and west. So the Mishnah says, Ein modedin ela bechevel shel chamishim amma. It has to be specifically a 50 amma long rope. Lo fachos v'lo yoser. It can't be, it can be neither shorter than 50 nor longer than 50 amos. The number 50 actually is, there's an allusion to it in Psukim. Why 50? But putting that aside, the reason for this 50 is we want consistency, and we're afraid if the rope were too short, then it would be easy to pull it very taut, and you actually, therefore, we get a little extra distance. And if the rope were too long, it would be difficult to pull it taut, and it would sag, and therefore you get a little less than the full distance. And therefore, we're going to go with exactly 50. Now, below yimdod, eila keneged libo. When you do the measuring, you want to ensure as much as possible that the rope isn't being held at a diagonal, because, of course, we're measuring horizontal distance away from the city, and the rope is 50 almost long. If you'd, for argument's sake, if one person would hold the rope above his head, and one person would hold the rope by his feet, and the rope would be at a diagonal, so then the distance, the horizontal distance, would be a lot less than 50 almost. So we want the rope to be as level as possible, and therefore, Chazal set up that they should hold it, the two surveyors should hold the rope at the level of their heart, in the middle of their chest, and the idea being that we are assuming that they're both of average height, and therefore their chests are pretty much lined up. And also, if you hold it too high or too low, the sort of parallax issues, it's difficult to tell if the rope is level. And we want that to be easy, we want the rope to be held level, and therefore, both hold at chest height, keneged libo, opposite their hearts. Now, something to consider, which is, the Mishnah is considering now, what if the surface, the topography of the land between, you know, throughout the Tchum of the 2,000 Amos is not flat? So the question is, do you include the contours or not? Meaning, for argument's sake, let's just say there's a steep hill in the middle. Do you measure from the surface of the hill, or kind of do you measure as the crow flies, ignoring the contours of the land? Now, the truth is that as far as a Doraisa measurement would go, let's say you have to measure the distance between two cities to figure out the rules of Egla Rufa when that applies, for example, or if you have to figure out for Ir HaMiklat purposes the closest city, how does that applies, and so on. So putting those cases aside, the point is when you do that measuring for a Doraisa, you actually include the contours of land, the surface. So you'd go, like, so to speak, along the ground, and figure out exactly the distances based on, like, if an ant were walking, so to speak, or whatever, a ball were rolling or something, a wheel. Now, in the case of Erevin, Tchum, we're going to be lenient. We're going to let people ignore the contours of the land. That, of course, will give us necessarily a longer distance, meaning we'll be able to go further out because you won't lose distance as you're going up and down hills. The reason why we're lenient when it comes to Erevin is because Erevin is just a din derabanan. That's what we paskin, and therefore we're going to be lenient and have our 2,000 amos to be a little bit bigger than it would be if we actually measured along the surface of the ground. That being the case, the Mishnah says, Hayamoded, if a person, the surveyors are measuring with those with the ropes, vihigia lagai, if they get to it's like a valley, o lagader, or to a like a pile of rocks that serves like a fence of rocks, mavlia v'choz lamidaso. So then, if it's short enough that they can just, you know, hold the rope right over or under the span of the ditch or valley or rocks, so then it's just, you know, just you can ignore it. If, however, it's too big, let's say, for example, the valley is, you know, whatever, it's 100 amos across. So that being the case, you wouldn't be able to have one person stand in the ditch and one person stand out the ditch and ignore the surface. So you actually would have to have two people spanning the ditch. And since it's impossible where they're standing, they'd be allowed then to go aside, like move parallel to where they're in the line they've been measuring up to now, until they can find a place they could do the measuring without either person have to stand on the tall mound or in the deep ditch. And that's called being mavlia, swallow it up. So in so doing, you enable yourself to get the same distance measuring, because remember, you're measuring in a straight line from, like, say, the center of the city due north. If you've hit this mound or valley, you can't keep on going in that straight line. So you'll measure a line exactly parallel to your line off to the, whatever, east or west, wherever you can. You'll measure that horizontal distance, and then you'll return back to where you started. And you'll get back in line with the original line you're measuring. So this is the leniency we're allowing, and because we don't have an alternative, really. So that's what it says here. Hayamoded, if you're measuring vihigi lagay or lagader, you reached a deep mound or a tall hill. Then mavlio, you swallowed up by on a parallel line. Then choser limidasa, you go back to the line in which you were measuring along the exact same line. Now, the Gemara considers the possibility of this being since impracticable if, like, say, for example, you hit a wall, a proper wall, or a very steep mountain. If you hit a wall, so then, and there's no way to do this practically, so then the halacha is you're allowed to actually estimate. They're going to have to estimate where it's impossible to estimate, but we're going to try to avoid estimation as much as possible. And therefore, the Mishnah says, Hegi lahar, if you reach a mountain and you're going in a straight line, mavliyo v'choz l'midaso, similarly, you'll measure it from a parallel line, and then you'll go back to going on the line you were measuring all before. But if you have to go so far now to the, let's say, to the right or to the left, you know, east or west, that you'd be bilvad shlo yetzi chut tchum. You're not allowed to go doing your parallel measuring beyond where the tchum is going to be, meaning more than 2,000 amos away from the city. Even if that would be necessary to be able to get around the mountain, you're not allowed to do that. The reason why is because we're concerned onlookers will see you measuring, the surveyor is measuring out there, and they'll think, oh, the tchum must also go out there, when in fact it doesn't. Since people will see that and make the mistake and carry on beyond the tchum, therefore the surveyors are never allowed to go beyond the tchum. So in the event that they're talking about a mountain, which is... they have no way but to measure over the surface of the mountain, and unlike a wall, you can't just estimate the thickness or something like that. So then, they have another plan. It says, "Im enu yacho lavlio." If there's no way to do this havla, this running a parallel line and absorbing the distance because the mountain goes so far, would force the surveyors to go beyond the tchum. So then, bezo. Now we have another technique, which is Amar Dostai bar Rebbe Yanai, Mishum Rebbe Meir, Shamati Shem Mekadrin Baharim. I heard, says Rebbe Dostai, the son of Rebbe Yanai, in the name of Rebbe Meir, that the technique is to literally means to drill through the mountain. Now, this is not literally true, of course, but we want to get a straight line sort of through the mountain. The way we're going to do this is with a simple technique of essentially taking much smaller measurements over the top of the mountain, where we're just attempting to measure the horizontal component. So if you ever worked with vectors or even a little bit of, you know, this should be not so this be intuitive to you, but otherwise, the idea is that if, here's what happens, here's how they do it, then I'll explain the idea if it's not clear in the way it comes out for me. They're going to take a much shorter rope, one that's just 4 amos long, and one of the surveyors is going to hold it like essentially at chest level and extend the rope parallel to the ground until it reaches the floor. Obviously, if the mountain is not that steep, then he will hold it lower than chest level. The point is, you're measuring from the beginning of the mountain, let's say, where he's holding it, to 4 amos across, where it hits the ground of the mountain. And then the next person will stand where it hit the ground, and then he'll raise it up to his chest level, so to speak, or however high it has to be. And the first guy will now move 4 amos further away. And again, they'll measure from that point, but just raising it up off the ground until, again, 4 amos later, it hits the ground, each time holding the rope as best as possible parallel to the ground. The idea is, in small increments, you're measuring 4 amos of horizontal distance as you slowly traverse the mountain. And you're that way you're also ignoring the vertical components of the mountain. You're just getting the horizontal pieces. Kind of like measuring steps. Like, let's just, if this wasn't clear to you, let's say you have to measure the horizontal distance of a set of stairs. So you can just measure, if you measure like just the surface, the horizontal surface of each of the steps, and then you add those up, you'll get the distance of the total horizontal length of the steps. You're just not including the vertical part at all. That's the technique. It's clearly acknowledged that this is a lot of small measurements. There's a chance for the rope to be held not quite level to the ground and so on. In fact, what level to the ground is quite difficult to figure out if you're on a mountain that's on a slope and so on. So it's acknowledged that this is a less precise way to measure, and therefore we'd like to avoid it. But in the event that we have no choice, because we have to go over the mountain, so then we will indeed rely on this Mercadrian technique to measure this part of the mountain to get to our 2,000 amos. Erevin Perek He Mishneh He 5.5. We continue to discuss the halachas of how one goes about surveying the tchum. And the Mishnah says, Ein mod din ela min hamumcha. The bartender brings two pshatim here. The first is that mumcha refers to an expert. So it's one may not measure the tchum through anyone who isn't an expert in the science of surveying and the techniques thereof. The Mishnah Berurah adds, based on the Rabbeinu Yehonasan, that also he has to be an expert in the halachas of tchumen. That's the first pshat the bartender brings. The second pshat he brings is that the word mumche doesn't refer to an expert, as we're familiar with in, let's say, modern Hebrew, but rather it refers to a smooth, straight, easily accessible path. The idea being that, although in the previous Mishnah we said that one could sort of do this parallel measuring if one encounters a ditch or a valley or a hill. But that's really not ideal. Ideal would be that one has sort of a straight, level path. And the word mumcha is related to the word macha, which one finds in Chumash Bamidbar. There in Matos, the pasuk is a pasuk lamadalad, excuse me, perik lamadalad pasuk yod aleph. And when it's talking about the borders of Eretz Yisrael, and it says, umacha al kesef yam kineret, and it's like a straightaway, a straight path along the banks of the Kinneret, the Galilee, Sea of Galilee. In any case, so the Shulchan Aruch brings us the first shot. The one has to use an expert to do the measuring. Riba l'makam echad umi'et l'makam acher. If, when one goes about doing the measuring, he ends up getting two different measurements. That is to say, let's say he measures like the northwest corner going north and then from the northeast corner going north. And then he gets to two different distances. So the meaning, like, now the footprint of the tchum will end up being like sort of on a diagonal instead of having right angles. So shomen l'makom shariba, we listen to the longer measurement. That is to say, we're going to use the further measurement out and then make a rectangular tchum, and we'll assume that the shorter measurement came from some kind of error. He didn't pull the measuring, you know, rope tight enough, or, you know, of course, if there is a gradual a decline or ascent, so then, of course, that would take away a little bit compared to a smooth flat area that he measured from. So we go leniently. And similarly, riba le'echad u'miyat le'acher, if two guys, two different surveyors, and dafka, we're talking about people who are both expert in the measuring of the tchum, both measure and come to two different measurements of where the tchum extends until shomen le'meruba, we will obey the one who gets the larger measurement. Again, more lenient, we're letting the tchum be larger. In fact, afilu eved, afilu shivcha, even if there's a non-Jewish slave, eved male, shivcha female, who normally would not be kashal edus, normally we don't accept testimony from slaves, even so, shomen the muruba, if they would give testimony, that they would say, I can confirm to you that the townspeople used to go up to this particular point regularly on Shabbos, and therefore it's certainly inside the tchum. So then, as opposed to what they're not saying is, I did it personally. If they said they did it personally, they'd have no, we wouldn't believe them. But if they said they did it, they're aware that this is how it used to be. They used to rely out to such distance. So then, ne'emanin, they will be believed to say, lomar ad kan tchum Shabbos, that the boundaries for Shabbos extend until here. Because in all these cases, why we're lenient with the measurement and between the two competing experts and even to rely on the testimony of someone who normally would not be reliable, is because shelo amru chachamim es hadavar lahachmir, when the rabbis said this 2,000 amma measurement as the tchum around, and it's, remember, it's rabbinic, that's the Mishnah here is possibly, that's just a rabbinic requirement, they didn't say it in order to be strict. El lahakel, they said they built into their rules that if there'd be some sort of conflict, like the conflicts that are enumerated in this Mishnah, we would go lahakel, we would take a lenient interpretation and allow for the tchum, the boundary for Shabbos, to be, you know, assumed leniently, meaning as large, the larger of the two possibilities. Erevin Perik Hey Mishnah Vav 5-6. This Mishnah will be going off topic. It departs from our chapter's topic of the tchum and how to measure tchum around the city, and it's going to discuss a totally unrelated topic that has to do with shetufim mavaos. Now, just very briefly to remind you, I assume you've listened to the introduction, and I assume that you have some familiarity, and if you don't, we will discuss at great length the topic of shetufim mavaos and erevei chatzeros in subsequent chapters. But just very briefly, the Torah allows a person to carry in a reshus hayachid, defined as a place that's walled in the proper mechitzos. Now, sometimes a reshus hayachid can feel like a truly private domain, like your home, and sometimes it can feel like a quasi-public domain because other people are allowed to be there. Like, let's say, like a walled-in football stadium. Does not feel like a private place, of course, but technically, since it has walls around it, halachic walls, assuming it does, it's a reshus hayachid. Now, the rabbi said that any shared living space where more than one household has the rights to be there and carry things in there and walk through there, it has a different psychological status, if you will, psychological, not halachic status, midoraisa, than your home, your private home. And therefore, they were afraid that if people were allowed to carry in and out of and through these like quasi-public domains, like a shared living area, such as a chatzer, a courtyard, a shared courtyard, or a mavui, an alleyway, a shared alleyway. So then people would end up carrying from their private homes into a proper reshus harabim, which is Isra Doraisa. And therefore the rabbi said you can't carry from a reshus hayachid to a chatzer or in a mavui, a courtyard or a alleyway, unless all the owners make at least some sort of symbolic joint consortium where they all live there together in one place by putting, let's say, food in a box. In the case of a chatzer, it's dafka bread. In the case of shetufim mavos, it's any food. They combine themselves with food, and they all are essentially one big happy family, a consortium living together in that mavui, and therefore they can all carry in that mavui together. Now, what's driving our mission is the following. If you have an entire city, let's say a walled city, so then technically the whole place is reshus hayachid, and it sort of has the same status as a mavui. Okay, somebody has the right number of chatzeros and so on, but typically it will be if it's walled, it will have a technical dorai status of reshus hayachid. It will work like a mavui, and therefore, in theory, you think you should be able to make one shetufim mavaos, one combination of residency consortium for all the residents of the entire city, and therefore everyone could carry throughout the whole city. Chazal were concerned, however, that if people grew up in a city where there was no problems about carrying, because it was a single eruv that covered the whole, a single shittuf, I should actually call it, that carries the, covers the whole city, people will just forget there's such a thing as the halachas of Erevin, Shittuvim Avos, etc., and they will come to carry or transfer in other cities elsewhere that aren't properly equipped, that are really Rishus HaRabim, or Carmelis even, for that matter. So for that reason, the general rule is that you cannot include an entire city in a single Shittuf and Mavos, as if it was, were one big Mavoi, because we're concerned over time people of that city will forget the basic rule of the requirements of Erevin. Now our Mishnah says, Ir Shel Yachid, if you have a privately owned city, that means one person acquired this whole city, he built it himself, it's his. And then let's say he, you know, he had rented it out to other people. So there were people who were living there, renters, but it was his city. So therefore, since it's his private domain, he owns it, and everyone who's there just is like a renter even. So carrying throughout that city would be not a problem, midoraisa, because it's a walled city. And the truth is that it's very much psychologically distinct from a regular city. People know this city, this town belongs to such and such a person. Being that it's his privately owned domain, no one would ever confuse it with a regular Rishus HaRabim. And that being the case, a privately owned city would never need to have a shituf in the first place if a person owned it by himself. And if there are other people who are renting there as well, so then if they would set up a shituf, that's fine. There's no reason to be concerned that over time people would forget that it's, you know, the rules of Shittuvim Avos and come to carry in other public places because this is this unique private city. And that being the case, we're going to say that as a private city, even if you rent out to other people, you could include the whole city in one Shittuvim Avos and everyone could carry there. The usual concern wouldn't apply. So our Mishnah wants to know what happens if, after being established as a private city, the original owner transfers some ownership, selling some of these homes to other people. So that's the case here. Ir shel yachid. It was originally a private city. V'na'asis shel rabim. But it became a public city, meaning this person sold off parts of land. According to most mefarshim, he retains some rights to the city, whether it's, you know, he retains the roads or not the houses, or he has some houses there, whatever the story is, he's there also. That's what most learn. But other people are there as well. Since it's clear in everyone's mind that it was, you know, Moishi bought the city, now it's still Moishi town, even though people now, you know, have separate homes there, still Ma'arvin Eskula, we will still allow a single Eruv that would combine the whole city. The truth is, the word Eruv here is a bit of a imprecise to use word. We're, again, speaking about a Shituf in Mavos, the whole of the city has a status of like a Mavui, and it's all going to be combined into a single, it can be combined into one entire Mavui, and people can carry it throughout the entire city. It does happen sometimes in the Mishnayos and elsewhere that when we talk about a Shituf, we refer to it as an Eruv. Okay, so this is not an Eruv Tchumen like we had elsewhere in the Perek. This would be, so to speak, like the Eruv Chatzeros, but in fact, it's really not even for a Chatzer, it's for a Mavui, so it's a Shituf in Mavos. Okay, but you can make it into one living area, including the entire city, no need to leave some piece out of the Eruv, because no one's going to get it mixed up and they're going to forget. On the flip side, Vishal Rabin, if it originally had been a regular city that belonged to lots of people, in which case there would be a prohibition against including the entire city into a single Shittufim Avos, even if it's got walls around it, even if everyone wants to participate, no, we're afraid people will forget the rule of Erevin in general and carry it in a public place, and therefore the rule would be for a regular city, assuming that the city is a public city and it has what's called, it's open, it has two entrances, like one on each side, and there's a road that runs through it that isn't locked at night. So such a city is Rishus HaRabim. Then even if you box up to make it no longer Rishus HaYachid by putting the walls, let's say, up or locking the gates or something, even so, and now back to being only like a, meaning it's walled all the time, and therefore it's not Rishus HaRabim, even so, you still couldn't include the entire city with a single Shittuvim Mavos, because people forget the rules. And we're saying if you took such a city, Vinasis Shel Yachid, and you transfer it to an individual, meaning one person, Rothschild, buys the entire city now, but at once public, now it's just Rothschild city. Even so, since it started out being a public city and people in their minds make confuse things, Ein Ma'arvin Eskula, you may not include the whole city into a single shituf and mavaos into a single unified area where people could carry throughout the whole city without anything being left out, lest people of the city come to forget. Even though now it's privately owned and just the people renting there, still, because it started out being public, it's not so distinct to people's minds, they can get confused. Ella, rather, in Kain Asa Chutzla Keir Chadasha Shebi Yehuda, you have to leave some piece of the city excluded from the Shituf, meaning some area where you cannot carry in or out of, in that city, within its walls. And how much has to be excluded? It has to be an area of residence that is comparable in size to the city called Chadasha, that's the name of the city. It means new, but it means the city called the capital, Chet, so to speak, Chadasha. The city of Chadasha actually is referred to in Sefer Yoshua. You can see it there in Perek Tes Vav, Pasuk Lamed Zayin. So the city of Chadasha and Yehuda had a total Sheyesh B'Chamishim Diurim. It had 50 residents living there. And that's the Rabbi Yehuda Shita, which is that you must at least exclude 50 people worth of the city from the Shituf. At all events, a regular public city, and even a public city which was transferred subsequently to be owned by a single person. Still, you can't make a Shituf that includes everybody. That's Rabbi Yehuda Shita, which is you have to exclude 50 people. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Shalosh Chatzera, Shal Shnei Batim. Rabbi Shimon says, no, the minimum amount to exclude from the Shituf isn't 50 people, but rather, it's three courtyards in the city, Chatzeros, Sheyesh Shnei Batim, each of which must have at least two homes. So it's a total, it works out to a total of six homes, of course, but it's three separate, like I'll call them neighborhoods, whatever, Chatzeros, three courtyards with homes around the courtyard that must be excluded. So he has a different shita. That's his definition. Now, as far as the halachas go for this sugya, for our topic of how much must be excluded out of a city, a city's entire shita of mavos, so the halacha is like a third shita brought in the Gemara, which says that even if you exclude just one chatzer with one house inside of it, that would be sufficient. And that's the din, because the halach in general is when it comes to Erevin, since they're derabanan, like Erev Chatzeros and Shituv Mavos, we go Lakula, so we go with that third most lenient opinion, which means you have to exclude just one home from one Chatzer in the whole city. That's the halacha. But you should know that Rabbi Shimon's definition of what constitutes a city does apply elsewhere in the world of Tchumen, back in our main topic here in the fifth chapter of Erevin, which is, if you recall, we're talking about, you know, if you have a city, then you make the circumscribed rectangle around it and so on. So how many homes you need to comprise a city? We don't measure 2,000 amos from the individual home, but 2,000 amos around the rectangle that surrounds a city. So the definition of a city is indeed Rabbi Shimon's definition over here, which is three chatzeros, each of which have two houses on them. That's the minimum size for a city. Once you have that, then all the other permanent residents around that area, even if they live in like teepees and whatever it is, you know, huts and tents and stuff, are all included in the city, and you extend around, you make that circumscribed rectangle on all the places where people could live, and then, you know, 2,000 amos in all four directions from there. Okay, so that's the din. La halacha, again, the halacha is like this, that she did not mention here in the Mishnah, but indeed, the basic halacha is that the public city can't be all included in one erev. However, Rashi learns this very differently. Rashi learns the Mishnah differently, and the Shulchan Aruch also is built on Rashi Shita. Bring a Yesh Orim and Ashkenazim are relying on the Shita. Rashi learns that what constitutes a private versus public city isn't how I described it at all. Rashi learns that a private city, meaning an Irshal Yachid, is one that has fewer than 600,000 residents, and an Irshal Rabim, a public city, is one that has more than 600,000 residents. And Rashi understands that's the threshold at which a place can be a Rishus HaRabim D'Oraisa. With fewer than 600,000 residents, it simply isn't a Rishus HaRabim D'Oraisa at all, and therefore you haven't got the concern, says Rashi, of the D'Oraisa forgetting about the Erevin and carrying it being Mechal Shabbos on the D'Oraisa level with Hotza. That being the case, according to Shulchan Aruch and Ashkenazi Halacha, if you have a city with fewer than 600,000 residents, you could include the entire city in a single Shituf and Mavos, and that would be acceptable. And that's how Ashkenazim, Rashi, by Tosfos, Rokeach, etc., learn, although the Sephardic Poskim, the Rashba, the Ritva, Rambam, etc., don't go the way at all, and go back requiring you to exclude people from the Erev in any city. Erev in Perek Hei Mishnah Zayin 5-7, and now we return to our main topic of Erevei Tchumen. This Mishnah is very fundamental. It sets forth two basic principles about how Erev Tchumen work. The first is, I'm going to say it outside first, before I read the words inside, because the words don't exactly say what they necessarily mean, or the implications thereof aren't exactly what you might think. So the basic principle is that a person can set up his makom shvisa, his home for Shabbos, using an Erev Tchumen, meaning he can put food out, but it has to be that as Shabbos comes in, he is in the same place as Erev Tchumen. That means to say that he and his Erev Tchumen, the food, are within 2,000 amos one of the other. If, hypothetically, he'd be beyond 2,000 amos distance from where his food is, or would be, so then that Erev Tchumen is not effective, and therefore his Makom Shvisa, his home for Shabbos, reverts back to what would be normal, meaning if he is still within 2,000 amos of his home, then it'll be his home and the area around his home, and if his home is in a city, of course it would be the whole city plus 2,000 amos in all directions beyond the city. And in fact, if he's not within 2,000 amos of his home either, then he's just stuck to the 2,000 amos wherever he happens to be. So therefore the Mishnah says inside, Mishahaya b'mizrach, if a person were in the eastern part of, like to the east of his town, v'amar levano, and he says to his son, or really to any shaliach, arev li b'marav, make an erev for me in the west, meaning to the west of the city, meaning on Shabbos I want to walk further west than the 2,000 amos which I'd normally be allowed if my makom shvisa was just my regular home inside the town. Or b'marav, or if a person were in the western side of Amr Levano and he said to his son, Arev li b'mizrach, prepare for me a Erev Tchumen to the east, meaning I want to walk to the east for the normal on Shabbos. So then simply, im yesh himenu leveisel alpaim amos, assuming he's within 2,000 amos of his regular home, ula eruvo yoser mikan, and if there's more than 2,000 amos distance between him and the food that would be setting up his purported Erev Tchumen, so then the Erev Tchumen is not effective, which means he reverts back to ignoring that, and therefore since he's within 2,000 amos of his home becomes his de facto Makom Shvisa, and he gets the normal 2,000 amos around his home, or the city in which the home is, and therefore the rule says in the Mishnah, Mutal Aveso, he is permitted to go to his home, and the 2,000 amos around there, V'asle Eruvo, and his Erev, the food, is totally forbidden to him, meaning it's inaccessible to him, and the setting up of that Erev is Erev Tchumen is ineffective. It's just nothing, since he wasn't in the same zone as it. On the flip side, Le'eruvo alpaim ama, if he were within 2,000 amos now of the food that his son or his shaliach put out for him, Ulevesa yoser mekan, and his house is at a distance of more than 2,000 amos, which in fact is not only so relevant, as I'll explain in a second, Asher Le'eso mutzal Le'eruvo, so then he may not go to his home, instead he may go to his Erev. Now the point of this line of the Mishnah is, his setting up of the Erev Tchumen is effective, and therefore his Tchum for Shabbos is defined as 2,000 amos in all directions from the food that he put out. His house is not relevant, per se, meaning if his house happens to be within 2,000 amos of the picnic basket, he could go to the house on Shabbos, and if not, not. The way the Mishnah structures it, so it should be exactly parallel to the previous case, we're saying that his house is beyond 2,000 amos. So that being the case, it's going to work out then, it's just going to happen to work out, that his Eruv will define the center of his Tchum, and that'll be the domain where he can stay. And his house happens to be forbidden to him because it's beyond 2,000 amos from, not where he's standing now, but from where the picnic basket is. Let me read the words again just to see it inside. It says, Le'eruv alpaim ama, if he's within 2,000 amos of his food that he's setting aside to establish his Erev Tchumen as Shabbos comes in, Ulevesa Yosem Rekan, and the house happens to be 2,000 amos further from the food, Asu Leveso, then he can't go to his house, Umutale Eruvo, but of course he can go to where his Erev is in the 2,000 amos around there. Now, new case in the Mishnah. Very important case. The principle here is very simple, which is, really it's twofold, but they're both straightforward enough. The first is that a person is given 2,000 amos beyond the border of his city, as we established in the beginning of the perek. We said that you are like a bear, you sort of make a pregnant city, if you will. So I mean, the definition of the border of your town is where all the houses are, including other things which could constitute legitimate residencies. We talked about like turrets over bridges and even collapsed homes and so on, as long as someone could live there. And we're talking about things that are within 70 and two-thirds amos of the rest of the city or the next closest domicile. So then it's all those residencies and potential residencies will be included in the definition of the city. You'll circumscribe a rectangle around all of those residencies, and then you'll give 2,000 amos beyond that. So essentially you've got like the town proper. Let's pretend that has walls around it, just to keep things simple. You have the walled city. And then you actually have, beyond the walls, you have the Iburo Shel Ir, like the pregnant extra lump that goes around the city, which is where there are other residencies close by to the walls of the city, let's say, within 70 and two-thirds amos. So, and then you get 2,000 amos beyond that. So, that being the case, if a person set up his Erev Tchumen, his food, to set up his Makom Shvisa, anywhere within the walls of the city, or even within the Iburo Shel Ir, even if he puts it in like those other residencies just outside the walls, that are within 70 and two-thirds amos, so he actually gains nothing, right? Because everyone who's resident anywhere in the city or those residencies or within that rectangle circumscribed around all of those residencies, they all have the exact same tchum for Shabbos, 2,000 amos in all four directions from the rectangle that circumscribes all of those homes. So you'd actually achieve nothing by putting a picnic basket as your Erev Tchumen anywhere within the initial rectangle in the Iburo Shel Ir, anywhere. And that's what the Mishnah says. It says, Hanosen es Eruvo be Iburo Shel Ir. If a person puts his Erev Tchumen, meaning his food, be Iburo Shel Ir, in the extension of the city, meaning one of those homes or even the area between the homes, let's say the walls, if there's walls, and even those, the bridges and the watchtowers, etc. Lo asa v'lo chlum. He hasn't achieved anything because he has the exact same tchum as before, as he would have in his own home, residence, anywhere in the city. He gets 2,000 amos in all four directions from the rectangle that circumscribes all of those structures. Now, the second part of the Mishnah, of this part of the Mishnah, the last part of the Mishnah here, makes the point that when you set up an Erev Tchumen, you're never going to be able to increase the distance that you're walking. It's always going to be 2,000 amos in all directions. And at most, all you're doing is you're just redefining the center of that rectangle. So if you're shifting the center of your Makom Shvisa, your home base for Shabbos, for argument's sake, 1,000 amos to the east, all that means you'll get an extra 1,000 amos of walking distance to the east that you would have had before, but it'll always come at an expense of at least 1,000 amos of walking distance to the west. So you're not actually gaining total area you could walk, it's just simply shifting where you could walk based on re-identifying where the center of that square of your Erev Tchumen is. So that's what it says here, Nasno chutz l'tchum, if you put your Erev Tchumen beyond the tchum. Now the word tchum here is not to be taken literally. Tchum here means not the full 2,000 amos distance beyond the city, but rather it means beyond the tchum. Word tchum here is referring to that the rectangle that circumscribes all the residencies of your town. If you put it beyond there, afilo ama achas, even one ama. So in contrast to the previous line of the Mishnah, where you were gaining nothing, now you're definitely gaining something because you're extending your tchum in that direction. But mashe niskar, whatever you're gaining in that direction, humafsid, you're losing in the other direction. Okay, you're just shifting the rectangle over. Now the truth is, you actually could be losing a lot more than you're gaining in total area, because you'll recall, if your city, for argument's sake, is a mile across, so your tchum was 2,000 amos to the east, 2,000 amos to the west, plus a mile in the middle, because you get the whole city. If you put your Erev Tchumen beyond the confines of the city, so that rectangle, so now all of a sudden you just get 2,000 amos to the east and the west of your picnic basket, which means you've lost a whole mile of walking distance. Keep that in mind. Lahalach lamaisa, just so you should know, in the event that the entire town is included within one's tchum on Shabbos, so the tchum is 2,000 amos in all directions, but the town is only like whatever it is, 500 amos across, a small little village. So in doing the calculations, the whole width, that 500 amos of the village, they only are counted toward as if they were 4 amos across. So in other words, you'll deduct 4 amos, and you're left with essentially, instead of getting 2,000 amos total, you'll get 2,000 amos total, not counting for the village, other than just 4 amos. So in other words, you get kind of like 1,996 amos in the direction of the village, plus the whole width of the village. Erevin Perkei Mishnah Ches 5:8. This Mishnah really should be learned as part and parcel with the next Mishnah 5:9. In fact, the way the Bavli has it, it's just one long Mishnah. And between the two of these Mishnayas, really, and we come to the end of not just the fifth chapter of Erevin, but really the entire treatment of the topic of Erevei Tchumen. We're at the end of that topic. With the sixth paragraph, we begin a whole new topic of Erevei Chatzeros. So this Mishnah here is a little bit convoluted, as you'll see what I mean in a few moments. So let me lay down the principles here first, which are actually very straightforward. The Mishnayos here, 5:8 and 5:9 combined, are basically making three points. The first point is that if a town has within its tchum another entire town, we'll call them villages maybe, so that is to say, you have a footprint of your village, and then beyond the footprint, that circumscribed rectangle, you have 2,000 amos in all directions. If, let's say, within 2,000 amos north of the city, you have an entire another village which fits inside that 2,000 ama tchum, so then the width of that second village is considered to be just 4 amos, 4 amos. Meaning, hypothetically, if you go north 1,000 amos, then you find a new, from the edge of your town's footprint, and then you find a new village, and that village is however big it is, it doesn't matter, as long as it is less than a total of 1,000 amos, meaning it fits entirely snugly within the 2,000 ama tchum. So let's say, for argument's sake, it's 800 amos, doesn't make a difference, whatever it is. So when you get to the edge of that, the northern edge now of that village, that second village, we look at that whole village's width as just being 4 amos, meaning from that northern edge, you still get another 1,000 amos north. Meaning you get 1,000 amos north till the beginning of the village. The whole village is discounted just 4 amos. Then you have another, true, there's almost 1,000 amos north of that. You actually get only 996 amos north of the northern edge of that second village, because the village itself counts as 4 amos. Okay? So the example I gave, hypothetically, at the village, the second village, were a total of 800 amos from south to north, you'd get 1,000 amos from the footprint of your city to the beginning of that second village. Then you'd get another 800 amos, the whole width of that second village going from south to north. And then you get another 996 amos north again, because you're only counting that village's width as just 4 amos. That's the first principle of the Mishnah. And for that whole principle to play out and make sense, just remember that if you have two villages that are within 141 and a third amos, one to the other, so then they're considered to be one contiguous village, and this whole Mishnah wouldn't come into play yet, because the footprint of that village would actually, that rectangle that you circumscribe around, would include both villages as a single rectangle, then you get 2,000 amos in all directions beyond that rectangle. But if it's more than 141 and a third amos away, one village to the next, so then indeed you'd have two separate villages, subject to what I described a second ago. The second point of the Mishnah is that if you're measuring 2,000 amos from the edge of your city and you end up in the middle, like when you get 2,000 amos exactly, you end up in the middle of a village or in the middle of a house or in the middle of a cave, it doesn't make a difference. When you get 2,000 amos, that's the end. You cannot go an inch further, which means half of the village or half of the house or half of the cave would be permitted to you, the closer half, and the other half would be disallowed to you, the farther half. It doesn't matter that it cuts the house right down the middle and just half of the living room is in bounds and half is out of bounds. That's how it goes. So the first point is if the entire village is in, then it's all in. But if it doesn't get the whole village in, then it cuts exactly a sharp line, even dividing structures within the village, or caves, etc., right down the middle. The third point of the Mishnah, unrelated to the first two, is that it's a question. There's a machlokas tanaim here, a question of when you make a symbolic home, if you will, by using an erev tchumen, and you put that picnic basket of food into, let's say, another nearby village. So are you looked at as a full-blown resident of that second village? Meaning now, the same way that village, every resident of that village gets the entire village plus 2,000 amos in all directions, so you like a bona fide resident, and you also get the full footprint of the village plus 2,000 amos in all directions? Or no? Is putting down Erev Tchum just making you sort of like a symbolic resident, and therefore doesn't carry the same benefits as being a real resident, which would mean that you only get 2,000 amos from, let's call it the picnic basket, or really technically from the dalet amos around the picnic basket, and not the whole city, but exactly 2,000 amos north, south, east, west from the arba amos of your picnic basket, and not the whole city. That's a machlokas. The Chachamim and the Halacha says you become a full-blown resident of wherever your Erev Tchumen is, so you're just like a resident there. And Rabbi Akiva is going to say no. Rabbi Akiva will say it's a symbolic makom shvisa, it's a symbolic place of residency, but therefore you don't get the benefits of being a proper resident. You just 2,000 amos in all directions from your picnic basket. Okay, that's the third point. So let's the Mishnah ask outside. Here, let's see them inside. Slowly. The first Mishnah says, sort of 5:8. Anshe ir gadola. If you have two... The setup of this mission is you have two cities, or villages, whatever they are. One's a big one, one's a little one. They, again, are spaced apart, at least 141 and a third amos. That is to say, let's say the southern village is the large one, and the northern village is the small one. So that means that the distance between the northernmost structure of the large southern village and the southernmost habitable structure of the small northern village are more than 141 and a third amos apart, making them two different villages for the purposes of determining tchumen. Just a reminder, where's the 141 and a third number come from? We said that the 70 and two-thirds is the distance from which you could extend from one structure to the next within a given village. Within a given village, that number 70 and two-thirds basically came up from being the square root of 5,000, which had its precedent elsewhere. And so if you have two villages, each are getting 70 and two-thirds, like potential buffer zone, so 70 and two-thirds times two is 141 and one-third. Okay, so the setup again is you have this large southern village and this smaller village directly to the north of it. And the setup is that the 2,000 amos to the north of the large southern village, that would be its tchum, totally subsumes, it totally includes the whole of the northern village. The whole northern village fits inside the 2,000 amos of the southern village's tchum. Okay? But the converse is not true. The large village is very large, and therefore it does not fit entirely into the 2,000 amos of the tchum to the south of the small northern village. Okay? So there's an asymmetry there, and therefore the residents are treated differently between the north and south as follows. Anshe ir gadola, the residents of that large southern village, whose tchum includes the entire northern village, mahalchenes kol ha'ir katana, they can walk throughout the entire smaller village that we have, in my example, to the north. However, ve'ein anshe ir katana, mahalchenes kol ha'ir gadola. On the flip side, the residents of the small village to the north may not walk throughout the entire length and breadth of the village to its south, since after 2,000 amos beyond the footprint of the smaller village to the north, you have a boundary that cuts through the middle of that larger southern village. So the point is the people of the northern small village only can walk to that southern boundary of their tchum and no further, even though it cuts through the middle of the city to the south of it, even if it cuts right through the middle of a building, as we'll see, or a cave, etc., as we'll see shortly. Okay, that's all the words I told you essentially were to explain that one sentence, which doesn't say very much on its own, but that's the point of the sentence. Now, the next word of the Mishnah is ketzad. Now, ketzad usually means how is this so, and it comes to illustrate the principle laid down in the previous sentence. As it happens, our Mishnah is missing words, and if you look at the Gemara and Samach Aleph of Erevin, you see there's like there are two versions of this Mishnah running around. In any case, they're missing words, so to speak. They're missing words, if you will, that are missing from our Mishnah here, which introduces a new concept, which talks about the question of when you put your Erev Tchumen, the picnic basket, into another town, do you become like a resident of that other town or no? And the principle is yes, you do. You become a full blood. The Tanakam, the Chachamim are going to say yes, you do. Meaning, if you put your pick, if you are a resident of that southern, let's say the north, the smaller northern village, but you put your picnic basket into, let your Erev Tchumen into that larger southern village. So now you become a resident of the southern village for Shabbos, and that being the case, you can walk the entire length and breadth of not just your village, but also the entire southern village. You get everything, okay? You become a full-blown resident, so to speak, for the Shabbos of that southern village by virtue of your symbolic residency with the Erev Tchumen. And that's the principle that the missing words of the Mishnah lay down, and therefore the Mishnah illustrates it by saying, Ketzad, how does that work? How does that look? Misha haya be'ir gadola, if a person were in the large city to the south, to the north, sorry, my example to the south, the large city to the south, v'nasan es eruvo be'ir katana, and he puts his picnic basket to make his Erev Tchumen beyond the footprint of his city in the smaller village to the north. Or be'ir katana, similarly, if he was normally a resident of the smaller village to the north, v'nasan es eruvo be'ir gadola, but he put his picnic basket for his Erev Tchumen into the larger southern town to establish residency there. So then, in the second example, Mahalach es Kula, since he's now got the status of being the guy from the small village to the north, now gets the status of being a resident of the southern larger village, he can walk throughout the entire southern village, edge to edge, V'chutz la'alpayim amah, and he can also go 2,000 amas to the north of it, and if we're talking about if it includes the southern village entirely, he can even go the whole thing I said before, throughout the entire northern village, plus, you know, a total 2,000 amos, only counting that northern village as 4 amos. And similarly, if you were in the south, putting your efforts to the north, so again, you get 2,000 amos around the footprint of that northern village, and no more. Okay? On that point, Rabbi Akiva disagrees. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Ein lo ele makum eruvo alpaim ama. Rabbi Akiva says, no, he only gets 2,000 amos around his picnic basket, or really technically the dalet amos around his picnic basket. And the reason why is, like I said before, Rabbi Akiva holds that you do not get all the benefits of residency just because you put a symbolic Erev Tchumen down. You just that does sort of move the center of your Tchum for Shabbos to a different place with the picnic basket, but it doesn't give you the benefits also of the whole village or structure even in which the picnic basket is located. Okay, we stop here, but I suggest go straight on to the next Mishnah, which is a straight continuation of this Mishnah right now. Erevin Perek Hey, Mishnah Tes 5:9, in a straight continuation of the previous Mishnah. You'll recall that Rabbi Akiva was saying that if a person who's a resident of town A puts his symbolic residency by using an Erev Tchumen into town B, he doesn't become a resident of town B for the sake of Tchumen, meaning he doesn't get the entire town B plus 2,000 amos, he just gets 2,000 amos around the in all directions around the dalet amos of his picnic basket. And the Chum disagreed. Now Rabbi Akiva thinks he has the Chum beat because he knows they hold that when it comes to a cave, if you put your picnic basket in the cave, under certain circumstances we'll see in the Mishnah in a second, you're only getting 2,000 amos in all directions from the picnic basket, or its dalet amos. Whereas if you were a resident of the cave, you'd get the entire cave as a single structure, even if the cave were 100 amos square. That would count to just 4 amos, and you get 2,000 amos beyond the walls of the cave in all directions. So for argument's sake, you get a total of, if the cave is 100 amos end to end, you get a total of 4,100 amos if you're a resident. Whereas if you just put your picnic basket in the cave, you just get 4,000 amos and 4,004 amos. Okay, so Rabbi Akiva thinks he's got the Chacham beat, and therefore he says, Amalhan Rabbi Akiva, Iyatem Modimli, don't you agree to me, says Rabbi Akiva, Benosen Eruva B'ma'ara, if you put your picnic basket, set up your Erev Tchumen, inside a cave, she'ein lo mimakum eruvo ela alpayim ama, that you don't get the whole cave as part of the Dalet Amos, just get 2,000 Amos in all directions from the picnic basket. And if that's the case, it should be exactly the same. We're differentiating between someone who put a symbolic residency with the picnic basket and a literal residence of the cave. So too, we'll differentiate between someone who put a symbolic residency of a picnic basket in the other town and someone who's actually a real bona fide resident of that town. Now, the rabbis say no. Amrlo, the rabbi said, no, Rabbi Kiva, we don't even agree to your premise. We say it's true that if you put a picnic basket inside a cave, under certain circumstances, you don't count the entire cave as being Dalet Amos. But that is Amosai. When does that apply? Bizman she'ein ba diurin. That is when the cave is simply not suitable for residency. I'm not translating literally, but that's the pshat here. Meaning that like the walls have come crumbling down. It's no longer suitable for living in the cave because the walls aren't there and it's not a proper Rishus Yachid. And that's why we don't count the entire cave as being Dalet Amos. Aval yesh badirin, if the cave were suitable for residency, even if no one is actually living there, but it just was a regular cave with good walls up, and you put your picnic basket inside that cave, mahalach as kula, we would give you the entire cave, and plus v'chutla alpaim ama, and then 2,000 more amas in all four directions from the boundaries of that entire cave. So your whole premise is wrong, Rabbi Akiva. Now, and the halacha, by the way, is like the chachamim. The chacham are going to speak out just a consequence of that shita, nimtza, it will come out then. Kal tocha melgaba. The rules of Tchumen end up being a little more lenient if you put your picnic basket inside the cave as opposed to on top of the cave. Why? Because if you're inside the cave, that's where you put your picnic basket, so then your makom shvi'i says the entire cave, which is considered to be just Dalet Amos, so if the cave, again, is 100 Amos on an end-to-end, you'll get 100 Amos plus the 2,000 Amos in each direction. Whereas if you put it on top, since there's no atop of the cave, since there's no mechitzos walls around that picnic basket, it's not a place suitable for living and residency. You'll just get simply 2,000 amos in four directions from the arba amos of the picnic basket. Okay, fine. Now, the Mishnah, as it ends the parak here, reverts back to something from the previous Mishnah, which we had said that you get 2,000 amos. Let's say, for example, you put your picnic basket, you're a resident of the large town, you put your picnic basket in the small town. We say you get 2,000 amos from the edge of the footprint of the small town, and no more, so you'll kind of cut down through the middle of the large town. So we say, v'lamoded, and as for the guy who's the surveyor, who's doing the measuring to figure out where 2,000 amos end from, let's say, the edge of the picnic basket, whatever it is, or any time you have, for that matter, 2,000 amos, however it's going to work, she'amru nosen lo alpayim, that we say you give 2,000 amos beyond whatever that you're measuring from, Shafilosof midaso kala b'ma'ara. It doesn't matter that the 2,000 amos ends and it kind of cuts a line through the middle of a cave. But a cave is not magical. The same would be true for a city or a house, any structure. Once the line is drawn at 2,000 amos, that's the end, the limit, and you get nothing beyond that, even though that will lead to the sort of strange scenario where you have, let's say, a cave or a home or a room or something where half of it is inbound and half of it is beyond the tchum for Shabbos. And with that, we finish the fifth parak and the entire topic of Eruvei Techumen. And now, Be'ez Hashem, we begin the sixth parak, which deals with Eruvei Chatzeros and Shituvim Mavaos.